Chapter 9. The Bridge Survey. I woke the next morning to the sounds of a passing bus and a crowing rooster. Still half asleep, it took me just a moment to remember where I was. As I continued listening to the sounds outside, I glanced down and looked at the variety of bugs crawling on the floor. There were a lot of bugs. When traveling, my number one room rule is whatever gets placed on the floor, particularly suitcases, stays on the floor and never gets placed on the bed. Then I realized the meaning of a statement Mike had made to me after one of the mission team meetings. Thomas, if a person isn't called to go, don't bring them. Suddenly a big smile came on my face as I began to feel a sense of peace, reflecting back on the sign God had shown me on the airplane and knowing, without a shadow of a doubt, this is where I was supposed to be. Knowing I was called by God to build this bridge helped me quickly forget about the inconvenience of sleeping in a hot room and the morning's cold shower. I was thankful for the room to sleep in with electricity, the soft bed, the oscillatory fan, and the running water. The people who live in the stick homes built beside the road obviously had none of these modern luxuries. After eating breakfast, we met with the Alcaldía de Matihuas, the Spanish name for the town governing body. This included the mayor and members of his council. Also attending the meeting were several community leaders. They represented the two communities whom the bridge would benefit. It was standing room only as Mike and Danilio took charge of the meeting, explaining the plan to build a pedestrian walking bridge over the Bulbul River. Since I couldn't speak Spanish, I simply showed them several pictures of completed bridges I had printed from the Bridges to Prosperity website. Everyone became excited about the possibility of a bridge. As we left the meeting, Mike gave me a quick summary, in English, of course. Basically, everyone was glad we were there and they fully supported our efforts. Then I asked Mike if he thought the town would be able to fund half of the money needed to buy the bridge materials. His answer was not what I had hoped for, as he stated, "Thomas, the town doesn't have any money to contribute. Our church will have to raise all the money needed for the bridge materials." The only good news I learned was that the town had a civil engineer, and he was at the meeting. This was exactly what this project needed to be successful, someone who could help me and B2P manage this bridge project from the ground. The trip to the bridge site was down a long dirt road. The mountainous views were absolutely magnificent. The lady on the plane was right when she told me her country was very beautiful. But one thing I had already noticed, even though her people are poor, they are clean. Everyone I met was dressed well, in clean clothes, not filthy rags, like I would have imagined in a developing country. These people are proud of what they own and take good care of it, whatever it may be. The 4-mile trip seemed longer than it was as we slowly made our way down to the river. It wasn't long before Oscar was stopping the van. This was it. Exiting the van, I saw a lot of people who were waiting for us. The mayor, his council, and the community leaders had arrived just ahead of us in another vehicle. Everyone followed Mike down to the location of the proposed bridge, or at least the place he and the other mission team members had agreed almost 2 years ago. In preparation of our arrival, the community had cleared the larger brush, which allowed easy access for the group. As I looked across to the other side, I realized the enormity of this project. It was a long way across. The gap reminded me of the Grand Canyon, especially since the other side appeared to be a 30-foot rock wall. This was actually good, meaning the bridge foundation on that side would be built in stable rock well above the river. However, I could already tell the foundation location for this side was much lower and in questionable soil, but still appeared to be above the high water level of the river, which was marked on a large oak tree. As everyone else talked, Avery approached me, smiling, and said, "Okay, let's get started." Seeing she was holding her Abney level, I set down my backpack and first pulled out the two homemade survey rods, hoping she would be impressed with my ingenuity. She wasn't. But then I pulled out the Abney level, and as I looked for the directions, she grabbed it and exclaimed, "This is a really nice Abney level." Avery quickly explained to me how the instrument worked and the few simple steps to follow in using it to take angle measurements for the topographic survey. After she handed it back, I looked at all of the intricate parts of the small, fragile-looking instrument: a sight glass with a bubble level mounted on top, and a movable protractor on the side to read the degrees. I hadn't noticed, but the town civil engineer, Nelson, was standing just behind me, listening. I wasn't sure if he had ever seen an Abney level either, but between the two of us, I was confident we could figure it out. Thankfully, Avery was a patient person and showed me and Nelson how to read the degree scale while looking through the lens at a rock in the distance. Then I remembered my friend in Blythewood had included several pocket-sized notebooks with the Abney level, so I pulled those out. Avery explained these were to record the angle and distance measurements for each survey point and to draw a rough sketch of the river's elevation profile. I had almost a dozen, so I gave her a few, since I knew I would never make use of them after this trip. Nelson and I stood and perfected our use of the Abney level, making sure we understood how to take correct measurements. After a few tries, the once strange little instrument became a very simple tool. We each took turns choosing an arbitrary object and then checking behind each other. Thankfully, Nelson knew enough English to where we could communicate with each other, since one person had to write down the distance and angle measurements. By this time, I noticed Avery had walked to the edge of the river bank and was looking across, trying to determine the best location for the bridge's center line. She had a roll of pink string in her hand and gave it to Santos, the Gavilan community leader. For some reason, the community men looked confused. Mike turned and explained to me this is a part of the river they don't normally cross, and they are afraid of disturbing a snake that may be hiding in the rocks near the river or lying in the small debris near the river's edge. The rocks in the riverbed sometimes have sharp edges, making the uncharted crossing even riskier. But the string had to take a straight path to the other side, which would mark the center line of the suspended walking bridge. Finally, one older man stepped forward and volunteered to take the string. As Nelson and I began taking the measurements we needed, I suddenly heard everyone start shouting, "Orlando!" We both rushed to where the others were gathered at the bank of the river. There, in the middle of the river, the man, not much over 5 feet tall, had apparently stepped in a hole. The water was almost up to his neck as he struggled to make his way out of the hole. Then some started laughing, but not once did he let go of the end of that string. What determination, I thought. As he exited the river, Mike and the others met him to get the string. They had crossed the river further down, safely making their way on the large stones. Then I saw something amazing: the men scaling the face of the rock wall, grabbing whatever vine or crevice in the rocks they could find, just to get the string to the top of the cliff. And they did. The string was cut and the end secured around a tree on each side of the river, making for a visible bridge center line. After this, Nelson and I finished taking the bridge's survey points, which included getting a good measurement of the bridge's span. It was slightly less than 60 meters, or 200 feet, which meant it was just within the Bridges to Prosperity's design criteria for using medium-sized cable anchors. Any longer would have meant a costlier design, and at this point, I knew we had to do everything we could to make this bridge more affordable. That afternoon, everyone gathered in a close circle. The mayor of Matiwa spoke first, followed by a few of the community leaders. Mike was the last to speak to the group. I wished I knew more Spanish, because I couldn't understand a word that was said. But as several people began to pray, I knew they were asking for God's blessing for the bridge, while at the same time thanking Him for sending our mission team to them. As we drove away, I started believing that the bridge project could actually be successful. But I still wasn't sure how we were going to raise the $25,000 needed to cover the cost of the construction materials, or even how long it would take for my church to raise that large sum of money. Then I remembered Mike telling me not to worry, that the Lord would provide the money. How, I did not know. I could already sense this project becoming a test of my faith in seeing how God would provide the resources. After supper, Nelson joined Avery and me at the small inn to go through the bridge design calculations. Within minutes of us sitting down, Avery had sketched out the bridge's profile. Then she began explaining how to calculate the required number of tiers for each side of the river, how to use the bridge survey information in calculating the height difference between the bridge towers, and the meanings of technical terms such as cable design, sag, hoisting sag, freeboard, and low point. The calculations and civil engineering terms in the bridge design manual were now beginning to make more sense. Trying to better explain cable sag and low point, Avery looked around for a piece of string. Finding nothing better to use, she grabbed her computer's electrical cord. She held one end and I held the other as she illustrated to Nelson why we needed to add an additional tier to the near side foundation. She explained how the additional tier would shift the cable sag's low point more towards the middle of the bridge, meaning the bridge's weight would be more evenly shared by each foundation. This would also make the angles more equal for each cable passing over the cable towers. The best single piece of information was the high water mark carved in the large oak tree, a mark resulting from flooding caused by Hurricane Mitch in 1998. This was needed to determine the bridge's freeboard, or bridge elevation above the flooded river. The design required that a freeboard be a minimum of 2 meters, about 6 feet, to allow for any large debris being washed downstream to safely pass underneath the bridge's walking platform. Going through the bridge design calculations the first time revealed we needed to add additional tiers to both sides to meet this design requirement. After redoing these calculations, the bridge design would be basically finished. It was getting late, so I told Avery I would finish this later, but just knowing the proposed bridge site was an acceptable location by Avery was all I really needed to know. Sitting in my room later that night, I felt really good about everything that had been accomplished at the bridge site that day. The bridge center line was marked, the topographical survey was completed, and we had met with the community and town leaders at the bridge site. But then it occurred to me, Avery had agreed to meet with me on her free time, not her company's. Now I realized why she had asked me to cover all of her expenses. This trip would have been out of her pocket, not Bridges to Prosperity's. And even though I had bought her plane ticket and was covering her meals, this didn't even come close to the appreciation I now felt I owed her. I'm not sure if I would have traveled to meet a complete stranger in a developing country, but she came on nothing but pure goodwill because she is so passionate for what she does and genuinely loves the people these bridges help, a real heart of gold. That Sunday morning, as we all prepared to leave, I had written a personal thank you note to a new friend I had made, expressing my appreciation for all of their help. And as I went to seal the envelope, my eye caught sight of the Abney level, and I remembered the blessing I had received from a friend in Blythewood, and how I wanted to pass that blessing on to someone else. I reached into my wallet and pulled out a $100 bill and put it in with the note for Avery. Sharing my loaf, that's what I enjoy doing more than anything else in life. Priceless.